Welcome to the D Word, the UK's only weekly internet radio show that talks dementia, with me, your host, Peter Hill. Good to have you on board for another D-Word here on UK Health Radio. The links between the arts and dementia are well established, and this week we're going to be exploring the world of masked theatre with Rachel Savage, founder and artistic director at Vamos Theatre, the UK's leading full mask theatre company, with a programme of plays with socially relevant stories covering subjects which include dementia. Rachel will be joining us right after this from Nick Lowe.
Don't be nice to me, I'm undeserving of your kind attention. Don't be nice to me, better you pass me by. I just put pay to the chance of loving a million. And if you're nice to me, you'll only have me crying. Don't be nice to me. Thank you for the invitation. Don't be nice to me. Sorry I can't stay. When I find a rock big enough for me to crawl under, I'm gonna hang a sign outside to the world. Stay away. Don't be nice to me. If only life could be like a walk in the park to the chill of a lark on the wing on high. Don't be nice to me, 'cause I can't guarantee what you'll find won't blow your mind if you're too kind. Don't be nice to me. Yes, I need a ride to the station. Don't be nice to me, but I'd rather walk in the rain. Yeah. Now I know I'm acting like a big galoo, and it'll all work out in time. But if you're nice to me, get ready to see me cry. Cry, cry, cry and cry. Cry, baby, don't be nice.
Nick Lowe and Don't Be Nice to Me, kicking off this week's edition of The D Word. Well, my guest is Rachel Savage from Vamos Theatre. Rachel, welcome to The D Word. It's great to have you here as my guest. Lots to talk about. You're artistic director and founder of Vamos Theatre. I mean, let's start at the beginning. How did that come about?
Oh, wow. Start at the beginning, Pete. So, I was an actor. I went to drama school at the Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama, that I might go back to at some point in this interview, actually, because that's where I had my first encounter in a care home making a show. And then after working nationally and internationally for 15 years, I then founded Vamos. And Vamos is a full mask theatre company, which means that we don't speak. It means the masks cover our faces entirely, and it's quite a difficult thing to describe on the radio. So our worlds are really different, Pete. You use words, I don't use words, but that means that non-verbal communication is my specialism. And so within Vamos Theatre, I write and direct the shows, and I make shows that are all close to my heart. So I made a show about forced adoption in the 1960s, another one called Dead Good, which was about empowering people about their end of life. Another one about dementia called Finding Joy. A Brave Face was about post-traumatic stress in the military. And the latest one, Boy on the Roof, was about ADHD, undiagnosed and misunderstood. So they're always shows that I do about 2 years research into before writing and directing. And I always have people living with those conditions in the rehearsal rooms and in the writing process to guide me at every single step of the way.
So you haven't taken the easy path there, Rachel, have you, with those subject areas?
No,
Obviously, they're
no. Do you know what, Pete? Because I want to make the world a better place and I want to change the world for the better. And because we have such a huge following for our work and we tour all over the world, because of course there are no words. And when people see our shows, they come to us at the end and they say, or they write to us and say things like, I'm a social worker. This has changed the way in which I'm going to communicate with my veterans with post-traumatic stress. My mum's got dementia. This has changed the way in which the whole family's going to care for her. So I want to make change, which is, yeah, why I don't choose the easy road.
Absolutely, and more power to you for doing so. I mean, in dementia terms, also, it's highly appropriate because dementia robs people of verbal communication and
Exactly.
body language, etc., becomes very, very important. And, that's why
Absolutely
what
true.
you're doing is so appropriate.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I think that the world has embraced our art form more and more and more because of our specialism. So I'll talk about Finding Joy maybe in a bit, but which was the show about dementia. But on the opening night of that, the Alzheimer's Society came to see it and said, that's training. Can you bottle this into training? Which is why I've then, over the last 15 years, been delivering a course called Listening with Your Eyes, which of course is all about taking responsibility for how we use our nonverbal communication. And that's from how we use our eyes to our facial expressions, from our posture, our pace, in order to empathize and be able to communicate with people in late stage dementia when words no longer make any sense. But body language does, and tone of voice does, and our eye contact does. So absolutely, Pete, you're spot on. You've kind of seen that about how our maybe it sounds quite a bizarre art form on the radio. When you see it, it really isn't bizarre. It cuts through right to the heart and the emotion and the intellect. But you're absolutely right. It has a perfect synergy, if you like, with carers and people living with dementia.
And from from an acting point of view, how difficult is it? Because most let's face it, most people's conventional view of the theatre is people talking, scripts, etc. But from an acting point of view, first of all, you won't be showing your own face, and secondly, you won't be saying a word. So it must be a real skill to be able to do that.
It is a real skill, but do you know what? I think, first of all, oh, you're very good at being perceptive about how things are so the thing that you said about you're not showing your face. So first of all, I have to work with actors without an ego because they're not seeing their name up in lights because they are anonymous. And then the thing is about mask acting, all you need to be, 75% of mask acting is about being a really naturalistic actor and being a strong actor. So, for example, when we're wearing the masks, if a character is upset, you'll be crying behind the mask because that every emotion and every thought impacts your body language. And this is what I teach in the Listening with Your Eyes, where we all have an internal monologue from the moment we wake up in the morning to the moment we go to sleep. And that internal monologue, which, if you like, is the script inside our head, We are showing that at every second of the day, unless we're incredibly good at hiding it. And so it's 75% being a good mask, being a strong naturalistic actor, and then it's 25% mask technique, which is my job to give actors those techniques. And I find it interesting that clowns are good at it because they have a similar art form in terms of they clock the audience and they communicate with the audience in a different way. But so do deaf actors because they're so good at being economical with their physicality. They make incredibly good mask actors as well.
And I guess in your training, it's a kind of two-way street for carers who look at things. And first of all, let's face it again, we normally take how someone's feeling by asking them, which starts off verbal communication. But it's actually picking up all those cues. And I don't know, that's the right way of describing it, but it's also putting non-verbal communication absolutely up there with verbal communication, whereas, in many cases, it comes second at the moment.
Yeah, and one thing that I really, really try to drive home with my training, and also we run a whole culture change and dementia care project that we're doing across in the United States and across the UK. And one of the main things that I try to drive home is stop speaking, be quiet, and watch. And really listen with your eyes. And we kind of have an embarrassment, don't we, where we feel like we have to fill pauses. And in filling pauses, you stop listening and you stop picking up on the cues and reading somebody's internal monologue. And so I teach, there's one, that I might talk to you about this. I've put all of the last 20 years of experience into making some online training courses because I'm working in the States and they're going, we can't get you over here often enough. And can you do something online? And then I work in the UK and they say, I want revision stuff. Can you give us this on film? And so there's 10 films that I've made all under a title called The Art of Care. And one episode is called All the Quiet Stuff. And that thing about all the quiet stuff is about using your eyes, listening, but it's also about actually what happens with that really quiet, minute stuff if you watch so carefully that you pick up on somebody's energy and you mirror their energy and you match their physicality. So I went into a care home one time and I led the training in this incredible care home in Skegness where I go in and the manager says, right, everybody on the floor is in this training and I will look after the floor and I'll tell you if I need help. So she puts everybody in this training, from the chef, from the cleaners, from all of the carers, you name it, she believes that everybody's caring because she's right. And after the training, I said, okay, so now let's go back into the lounge. And let's go and sit and talk with somebody and don't choose the easy person. So I went and sat beside Doug, and Doug has got early onset dementia. He's young, he's cross, he's frustrated, he wants to speak. I sat beside Doug and I look him in the eyes and I'm smiling and I'm nodding, which is what you're doing now. Which is great communication. And he starts speaking, but the words don't make any sense. So I'm then watching him and I start to mirror his movement. So his hands are gesturing in quite a frustrated way and quite a staccato, jagged way. And I start to mirror him, i.e., copy him, without making it look like I'm taking the mic, which is a fine line. But what that meant was that he then kept talking, but the words didn't make any sense to me. But he kept talking for 45 minutes because I was listening and copying and mirroring, which is basically saying, I agree with you and I'm listening to you. And then the next day I went in, and brilliantly, the care home manager had double booked me with a karaoke singer who was incredible. And I asked Dog to dance, and Dog and I danced for oh goodness me, nearly an hour. And again, I copied and mirrored every energetic, unpredictable, wild movement that Doug did. And at the end, when it was time for me to go, he started speaking to me in sentences that made complete and utter sense, because the body's like a river and we need to move. And when it doesn't, we become like a dam and we need that to be unlocked. And so it's all of this work that I am utterly passionate about, Pete. And it goes from everything from non-verbal to accepting realities to all the quiet stuff to mealtimes and mistakes, you name it, it's all in this the art of care that I'm literally in the final edit of.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Face when he looks in glass, thinks he'll bargain by.
3B from the marvellous Kate Rusby here on the D Word. Well, it's always good to hear from you. We're on all the social media platforms as Radio TDW, and the email is tdwradio@gmail.com. My guest this week is founder and artistic director of Vamos Theatre, Rachel Savage. One thing actually resonates with part of that, I spent 2 years managing activity groups for people living with dementia in the community. And as a radio man, I've been involved in radio since I was a teenager. I don't like dead air, so silences, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. So it's really difficult just to not fill that gap. But I think in those 2 years, with the people that I saw that were non-verbal, I actually began to learn that and realise that, again, talking about skills, there's a real skill in doing that. And sometimes, even in radio work, and I know this sounds strange, but a little gap actually serves a purpose.
Absolutely. And when you're communicating with somebody living with dementia, you need a pause for the processing time. So there's so many reasons for all the quiet stuff. We do another show like you, which is activity based with people living with dementia, and it's completely nonverbal. So we go in at the beginning and we talk, and we meet everybody, we shake everybody's hands, we welcome, we look people in the eyes, and we find out their names, and then we remember everybody's names, and then the rest of the performance is done literally without any speaking, because we are engaging and listening so hard. But the main thing is also trying to encourage the carer who's sat beside their loved one to not speak as well. So it goes, it's fascinating. And it's only at the end when people go, oh, I didn't realise that you weren't speaking. They are. The audience are. The audience can talk all the way through, but we're not. And they're on the edge of their seat. And I worked with an activity coordinator once who came up to me and said, I can't believe that Margaret was so engaged. She was on the edge of her seat and she never usually takes part in the activities. And I asked if she was hard of hearing. And she went, oh, yeah, completely and utterly deaf. And I went, OK, so that's another reason to have work that's nonverbal.
Yeah. Totally is so, yeah. It's, it's such an interesting area, and an area that I was saying that you don't really think about. I'll admit it, you don't really think about it. And I think that's, that's brought it all to life, certainly. I mean, one thing, you're a theatre company, you're doing plays. Now, as well as all those social aspects and the difficult subjects that you're covering, it's got to be entertaining, hasn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely, it has to be entertaining. And it has to be a story that needs to be told. So in the research that I do over 2 years, I find the absolute gems from people's stories and I make that into the story. But it needs to be a roller coaster of emotions. You need to have moments where you're laughing. You need to have moments when you're crying. You need to have moments when you're thinking. And actually, what's brilliant, when I receive emails that say from people 2 weeks on, I can't stop thinking about that show. And I think that's the other thing about Mask Theatre is, in our blockbuster movies, we get everything handed to us on a plate. But in Full Mask Theatre, because it's non-verbal, the audience, they almost have to lean forward and meet us halfway to interpret. And what happens then is that we've got a direct connection with their intellect, but a fast-track route down to their heart. So they're intellectually engaged. We make them cry, that makes them think, and that's the way in which I believe we can change opinion. So it kind of goes full circle. But yeah, it's got to be entertaining, which is, otherwise why go to the theatre? And it's why we pack out venues across the UK. And brilliantly, Pete, the show that I wrote, Finding Joy, about living well with dementia, is going to tour again for the first time in 10 years. So it's toured all over the world, and now it's retouring again in the spring of 2027.
Oh, excellent. You'll have to let us know all the details about that. I mean, you know, we've come on to Finding Joy. Tell us a little bit about that one. You know, you said your website, by the way, is excellent. There is so much good stuff on your website. It'd probably take you a day to read it all. It's all absolutely excellent. But, it's about approaching dementia with humanity and humour. Now, humour's one thing that we've talked a lot about on this show, because humour about dark subjects, basically, and a lot of people shy away. And, no, you can't, can't introduce humour in a subject like dementia. Mm. But, you've probably found, and I find, that if you ask people living with dementia, then humour is a massive part of everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, that's the first learning point that I start my Listening With Your Eyes training with, which is the first exercise makes people laugh. And I say to them, what's changed? What's the difference in the room? And they say laughter. And I said, yeah, laughter's powerful because it makes us breathe differently. It physically opens up our body, which makes us more willing to connect and build trust. And for people living with dementia, as you say, Pete, laughter is incredibly important. And people living with dementia want to laugh as much as anybody. And, in every care home I go into, I always ask residents, what do you want? What's good care for you? And one woman recently said, I love the carers that laugh because that makes me laugh. And it's the same thing as what my nanny always used to say to me, laugh and the world laughs with you. Cry and you cry alone.
Absolutely true words. And it is so, so important. Finding Joy then, where do you get the storyline from?
It was back in about 2010 when I was first asked to make the collaboration with Hereford Courtyard, and the chief exec came up to me and said, I really want to make a co-production with you. And I was thinking, incredible, wow, this is going to be worth a lot of money and kudos. And it wasn't either of those things, but anyway. And then he said the theme's dementia. And at that time, my nanny was living with undiagnosed serious memory loss at the age of 97. So it was incredibly personal to me. But I started doing the research, as I always do, and all of the interviews, documentaries, novels, films, you name it, that I read was negative. This is a 2010, but everything was negative and everything was focusing on losing, losing, losing. And it's not that I want to celebrate dementia, but what I do want to do is I want to celebrate a life, and I want to celebrate a person, and I want to find any which way to find that person and to continue finding that person. And so thankfully, my mum got, I was talking to my mum and she said, why don't you get back in touch with our old family friends, Penny Greenland. And Penny had been running a company called Jabberdeo. Now, there might be some listeners who've heard of Jabberdeo, and Jabberdeo are absolutely inspirational because they work with people with really early years, looking at movement, play and movement development, and older years, particularly those living with dementia. And at that time, Penny was also looking after her mum, Audrey, who'd been living really happily with dementia for the last 7 years. So I basically, Pete, I invited myself and went and moved in. So I get on a train, go to Suffolk, and I move in for a week, and I watch and I learn, and I have a life-changing transformation, really, that has guided every piece of work I've ever done since. And oh, there's so many stories from it. But essentially, there was one point where I'm sitting in between Penny and Audrey, and Audrey sleeps most of the time in the fetal position and wakes up maybe every 3 hours and asks something like, "Are you a raspberry or a rascal?" was my favourite question. I said, "I'm definitely a rascal." And then she goes back to sleep again. And then Penny once told me about how her son, Rowan, became his gran's carer. And he'd left school. He was into his mates, his football. He adored his gran. And he could see that his mum was struggling running a company. So he said, "Can I become gran's carer?" And they said, yeah. They got him some training. And thank goodness he was a natural, because he was a natural in playfulness, reading his gran's nonverbal communication, accepting her realities. There was no challenging. It was all learning. When I asked him, Rowan, how he learned, he said, "My gran taught me everything." And so I just heard so many stories that I could talk to you all day about, but I became inspired by this story. And it's a love story between a grandson and a grandmother, and a grandmother who at times didn't know who she was, didn't know where she was. But what she did know is when that young lad walked in the room, her life lit up. And so it's their adventure and the way in which so many people still become inspired by the way in which Rowan found to care for his gran and look after his gran so beautifully, with cheekiness, and, you know, is just utterly adorable to watch.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
The ideas that I always feel have got some motion, I suppose, behind them, as you'd call it, are those people that think outside the box. And so, you know, and just hearing you speak, I'm thinking, wouldn't it be brilliant if everybody could go there and they could spend even a day with someone living with dementia and their carer? And, you know, even put that up the tree when it comes to policy and stuff like that. Hey, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, 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 it would. I for some time sat on the Prime Minister's Focus Group for Dementia and worked really closely with the brilliant Ian Sheriff, and absolutely, you mentioned the word policy, because actually it slipped off the government agenda. And this is where it needs to be if we're going to create change. And that's what I want to do, hence this dementia change, culture change project. And it's working. It's working right across the world, because, of course, dementia isn't special to this country. It's Finding Joy has toured to China, to Norway, across Europe, with the same reactions that it had in this country. The work that we're doing now in the culture change is also happening in the US, where I'm working at the moment making a production, especially for people living with dementia in care homes. And I'm directing it online and watching it online. And every time I keep coming back to, don't worry about when you're engaging, when you've got activities, don't worry about your storyline. Don't worry about your theatrical conventions. Worry about how you're engaging. Worry about how you continue to touch and hold and make connection, because that's more important than anything. So it's global. It's the policy needs to change right across governments and right across care home providers. But people need empowering, I think. And I think they need permission to think outside the box. You know, there's one little film in The Art of Care, which is called Permission to Play, because I think particularly since the pandemic, people have had so much fear and stress in their lives about how they care for somebody living with dementia. I delivered a training session once, which was about how we touch and how we hold and how important that is. And one of the young carers turned to the manager and said, "We're not allowed to touch anymore, are we? Since the pandemic, we're not allowed to hug." And it's because people's priorities were infection control and keeping people alive. And that doesn't include play. And so what I'm trying to bring back, coming back to that laughter and that policy, is also to bring in the permission to play and bring joy into people's lives. And that's not just the person you're caring for. That's also the carer, whether you're a professional carer or you're a carer at home. And in my life, I'm starting to experience this in my own personal life with a very, very early diagnosis with one of my parents. And I know that humour and joy and accepting realities, so all the things that I'm having to practice what I preach firsthand, and I know it's not easy. I know it's not.
It's not easy, but you know, part of it is finding the key to unlock the door, whether that be laughter, whether, you know, whatever, and you doing it through non-verbal communication, as I see it, just gives people another channel. Part of the problem, I feel, you know, I talk to people all over the world, very, very similar to what we're talking about. And it's this kind of risk aversion that, you know, was summed up to me in one of my groups when someone said, so-and-so's got 2 paracetamol in his glass case in case he has a headache. And I said, yeah, and? Whoa. And it's a total panic. And I said, well, he's 70, whatever it is, and he knows exactly what's going on. That one always stuck with me, because I think people are just so risk averse sometimes.
Yeah, they really are. We're looking at the weekend to see if we can put my dad on a train from Newcastle on his own and me picking up in Birmingham. And it's just this morning I've looked online and seen that National Rail do assisted support so that people can travel alone. So it's those kind of things where you go, yeah, OK, there's risks. He might get off at Derby. But what's the payoff? What's the payoff? He could have a 10-day holiday and his wife will get some respite. You know, so you do, yeah, those, you're absolutely right. Weigh up those risks.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's cost benefit analysis when you really look at it. So, what you were saying, obviously you had involvement with the Prime Minister's group or whatever. Mm. Wouldn't it be lovely if you turned up at Westminster and gave them a bit of what you give to carers?
Yeah, I know. It's... Ian Sheriff, the chair of this group, has kept saying, could you perform Finding Joy in the House of Lords? To which I say, yes, and I want to. and can we work together to make that happen? So, yeah, I keep phoning him up saying, come on, Ian, when are we going to the House of Lords with this? Because, again, it's that thing that there's been other meetings that I've had down in Westminster with on several different occasions with Ian where we're talking to MPs. It's always the MPs that are having lived experience of it with somebody in their family. And it's always those people that, of course, are more passionate about raising the awareness and making it not a postcode lottery, and about your care that you're given and about putting it back onto the agenda, RE funding and stuff like that. So it's, yeah, we're on the same page.
Absolutely on the same page. Well, sadly, time's bringing us to a close, Rachel. It's been absolutely fascinating. And, you know, it's just another aspect. I love doing this show because I speak to so many people that are thinking outside the box, doing so many interesting things and really making a difference. I mean, you said, you know, you are hopping back to 2010 when you started finding joy. And I think, you know, in postscript to finish off, I've noticed the difference in the 7 years I've been doing this show. Have you noticed a big difference since then?
Yes, I have. Though sometimes I worry that we're going to go back full circle. There is a change, and there is a change in care homes. And I go to some care homes where they've absolutely got it right, where they are playful and open, and they'll sing whilst giving somebody medication, where they absolutely look people in the eyes and they tell them what their medication is for. So, but then sometimes I also see the opposite of that, which makes me think, ah, what's happening? But that's why I want to get this, you know, I've worked in over 200 care homes. I've worked across the world, but now I know that if it's going to disseminate further how to bring this culture change, it needs to go digital, which is absolutely the opposite of anything that I've ever believed in, because I've always believed that my training needs to be face-to-face, needs to be tactile, needs to be experiential in the room. But actually, I think the pandemic has taught us that we need to be better at connecting online. And we need, you know, this... I was asked during the pandemic to write a BBC series about anything that I wanted to. And the series that I chose was about how a family stays connected to their loved ones during the pandemic. And that reached 100,000 people, you know, and that, but that's because it's a different art form. So I the way I constantly have to think outside the box is, yeah, that theatre can get 400 people in. That BBC commission can get 100,000. That digit, so, and also I don't want to be flying all over the world. So it's, yeah, it's, I'm constantly having to be creative. And what I love is when I hear creative stories, for example, in care homes, which is one last little story. I found a story where there was a resident, George, who just joined the care home, who at 5 o'clock every morning was going into all the residents' room and stealing in inverted commas, anything made out of paper. And then he would sit down and he wouldn't eat his breakfast. And then they realised he used to be a postie. And so what do? They make him a postbox. They give him envelopes. They give him envelopes in different colours that he needs to sort. They get up with him at 5 o'clock and they support him to do the rounds. And he goes on those rounds and he posts every single piece of envelope outside the resident's room. And then what does he do for his breakfast? He sits down and eats once he's done his round. And it's that, think creatively, think outside the box. And I believe that's the way forward.
Certainly is. Thank you so much. Keep on doing what you're doing. And we look forward to finding joy next year. Thanks, Rachel.
Thank you, Pete.
Thanks to Rachel for a fascinating introduction to Full Mask Theatre. And if you'd like to find out more, including details about Finding Joy, it's all on the excellent website vamostheatre.co.uk. That's all for this week. Thanks to Angela, my production assistant. Next week, dementia advocate and carer, Kerry Higgins, will be here, chatting about her experience caring for her father and advocating for a change in dementia care in Wales. So until then, thanks for your company and take care now.